Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Wendy's Big Show. I'm Bill Baby Tao Schmidt, Steve Sparky Pfeiffer, alongside for the next 4 hours here on 105.7 FM, 1250 AM, and the radio.com app. Appreciate you hanging out. We're going to have Miren Fader joining us from Bleacher Report at a story about Alex Antetokounmpo. And you always hear there's always the one other brother. There's always the one other brother that's going to be better than the next. Can there actually be one better than the one that just was named MVP of the NBA? We'll see. We'll know a little bit more about the Dominican guard's future. Your boy Jim Goss, I know you covered high school sports in this town for a long time. You've seen a lot of talent go through Dominican. And we'll get a little bit new look at what exactly he could be. So you're not buying that he's the better brother.
I haven't seen him play.
As like every dad. Now, you'll hear this being a youth sports parent, though. Every guy that has a son that's really, really good or a daughter that's really, really good at volleyball or basketball, just wait till you see the next one.
I know.
Just wait till you see the next one.
J.J. Watt. I mean, that youngest one, the Watt family, came strolling through. They said he was going to be the best one.
I'll tell you this, though. T.J. Watt was some kind of animal when we were playing against him as a seventh grader. And he was rushing the passer like he does at this level. Now, John McNamara stops by at 4:05. Talk about Big Ten Media Day down in Chicago. And Adam McAlvey, as he always does on Fridays at 4:48, joins us to talk Brewers baseball. And Sparky, that's where we start after last night's game. Brewers get a big win. Maybe not a huge win, but a big win when you're facing the barrel of the last 2 weeks here before the trade deadline, and they get it done in Arizona, a team that is right on their heels in the wild card race.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this is a big series. Well, like you said, every series is a big series now going forward in the last couple of weeks, especially when your general manager throws it out there. Yeah, we'll see what happens, and then we'll make our decision at that point. Right now, we're buyers, and that is why they have to at least play 500 here in the next 2 weeks.
For sure. Absolutely.
They want their general manager to go out there and be a buyer at the deadline. And that's really what this is all about. Davies had another nice outing last night. Albers closes it up. Obviously, you don't need to waste Hader when you're up by, what was it, 4 runs or whatever. So that was nice to see. Bullpen didn't blow it by any stretch of the imagination. Nobody had multiple hits in the game, but everybody had contributions in the game for the most part offensively. And you get a triple. Braun figures out a way to get the guy in. I mean, that type of stuff is what you want to see. But again, consistency is it. And I haven't looked to see how many runs scored they've had here since the All-Star break, but I think they're averaging more runs than they probably have at any other point during the season. Their offense seems to be clicking through the first four or so games after the All-Star break.
And the two top guys that have been running the show here since the All-Star break, Keston Hira and Christian Yelich.
Yep.
And last night, neither of them come up with the big hit. But Keston Hira keeps it going and keeps it rolling in that eighth inning, allowing you staying out of the double play. And then the big inning comes where you score three in that eighth inning and you win it 5-1 out in Arizona. And the Brewers 2 games back of the Cubs right now. But the conversation has been of where do you slot them in the playoffs? Where can they get to in the playoffs? And I think that's one of the interesting conversation points for David Stearns after he makes the comments of, we'll see where we are after the break. We'll see where we are at the trade deadline. We'll see how these next 2 weeks play out. But for some of it, it's not necessarily where you are in the standings, because the standings are what they are. You're two and a half games back of the Cubs, regardless, in the next couple of weeks. But most importantly, the one that might be the more important question is, where are you as a baseball team after the next 2 weeks? Is it more important for you how the Brewers are playing in comparison to just how the Chicago Cubs are playing, who are down 3-0 right now to the San Diego Padres? Buster Olney was on the station a couple hours ago as Tim Allen filled in for Bill Michaels, and he asked him a question about if the Brewers are a good team in the sense of how good can they be in the NL. And Buster Olney compared it to the top team in the NL that everybody appears and knows that they're chasing in the LA Dodgers?
Boy, and it's a great question, but I think within from 30,000 feet, given what they accomplished last year, given you know some of the high-end performances they have on their roster, I think you'd feel confident that if they get into the postseason that they would be able to make a dent. I mean, let's face it, at this point, it's the Dodgers, and there's a separation, and then there's a question of who's going to challenge the Dodgers. And I think there's a legitimate chance that if they got into it, in part because the players that they have, that they would present a challenge for the Dodgers.
That's a guy that's seen a lot of baseball over the last 25 years, covering it at the highest level. He believes that they have a team that can compete against the LA Dodgers as constructed at this moment. Stevie, you've been adamant that they cannot compete with the Dodgers at this moment.
No, I don't think it's close pitching staffs-wise. I just don't. I mean, and you can tell me, well, anything can happen on a given day, right, but you have to have anything happen on several days in order to win a series.
Four of seven, yeah.
It's not one game. Mm-hmm. You know, the NFL, you can get lucky on a given Sunday and upset somebody and have things go your way. Okay, fine, that can happen. And the NCAA, you can have something go your way and get absolutely unconscious from three and upset somebody and continue your magical run through the tournament by getting one big upset in one game of a tournament. That's nice. But when you start talking about getting into series like the NBA has or MLB or NHL, now we're talking about now the better team is probably going to win when you start talking about playing best of five series or best of seven series or whatever the series may be. Now, this one game playoff stupid thing of a wild card, okay, that's a crapshoot. That's really not justifiable in my mind whatsoever. That's just like the NFL. But when you start getting into series, divisional round, NLCS, World Series, now I think everything comes to fruition. If you look at their starting rotation, baby Tosh, the Dodgers, and you look at the Brewers, and then you look at both offenses, I struggle to see how this is going to work. I really do. Could the Brewers get a game in the series? Yeah, maybe. Maybe they get a game in the series. But I just don't know if they get more than that. And this Dodgers team knows this Brewers personnel. I mean, you haven't really added anything. You added Grandal. Well, they had Grandal.
Yeah, they had him.
They know Grandal. They know Moustakas. They know Kane. They know Yelich. They've seen these guys over and over again last year. You know who else they know really well and intimately? Josh Hader. They know all about Josh Hader and how to get on Josh Hader. Same with Jeremy Jeffress. I like the fact that Buster only gave the Brewers a chance and said they could challenge in a series, but I just don't think there's enough horses to make that a fight.
414-799-1250. What chance do you give the Brewers against the Dodgers in a playoff series right now? Right now is the situation at hand because you don't know what move a team could make. You don't know if another infield depth move will be made by the Dodgers. You don't know if it'll be made by the Brewers. You also don't know what kind of pitching moves that they will make because the Dodgers will add to their roster. They have a fully loaded farm system to continue adding, and that's what happens when you take guys 20th overall and they turn out to be superstars within a couple of years as prospects, and Gavin Lux, who they also talked to earlier today. But there's
Indian Trail.
There's situations that continue to pop up during the season, and you brought up familiarity. It's a great point, but also, can't you say it on the flip side that the Brewers are very familiar with the Dodgers rotation? They had a lot of success off Ryu last year in the postseason. Mm-hmm. Not as much off of Kershaw as you would have liked outside of Brandon Woodruff, who also fared very well against the Dodgers. So I think familiarity can play a part on both ends of the spectrum for that series.
You have no Swarzak. You have no Corey Knebel. Jeremy Jeffress at this point does not look like consistent Jeremy Jeffress like he looked in the second. Now, again, there's 2 months, so Jeffress can get better. But you still don't have a Swarzak. You still don't have a Corey Knebel on this roster. Now, they go out and they add two really, really good relievers at the deadline. Okay, we can revisit this conversation. But as of right now, I just don't think so. I mean, this bullpen has been suspect most of the year. And now you're saying you're going to go against this talented offense in the Dodgers, and you know darn right well, more than likely, you're not going to get pitchers going 7 or 8 innings against the Dodgers. I mean, Craig Counsell's not going to allow that. You get into the playoffs, and we saw what Counsell did last year. 5 innings, out you go, to the bullpen we go. So you're going to rely on Zach Davies and Chase Anderson in order to get you through this at the end of the day?
Zach Davies, definitely. Zach Davies, definitely. You see him last night? Rusin. Yeah. No strikeouts through 7 innings of 1-run ball. Yeah. That's the kind of pitching staff that you have. You have a staff of young dudes that maybe aren't the household names, but two of the top pitchers in the NL are playing for the Brewers, and they're both 26 years old.
The more you talk, the more I hear Tim Allen talking. I swear to God, you do the fist movement.
Just excitement.
And what it is, I think part of it is that you guys try to convince yourself that you're right. You're trying to convince yourself of the optimism, and I know I'm right about this. I'm going to say it, and I believe,
I'm trying to convince Brewers fans about it.
I'm trying to convince myself.
Brewers fans. Stay into it.
I think y'all are trying to convince your damn selves to be optimistic as possible. But that's okay. I mean, they got the win last night. That's good. But this old Buster Olney thing, thinking they're going to challenge, I don't see it. And I know I'm the negative guy, but I just don't. Look, if the Brewers go out and add some stuff, a couple Dodger players get hurt and aren't there, okay.
Injuries have been a part of the Dodgers season this year.
Problem is, every time they bring somebody up, they play just as well as the guy they replaced or better.
You know, you didn't have to continue to pile on there. That was one of those soft ending points where we just go into the break.
But, I mean, let's bring the facts to the table.
It's true. Very well true.
It is what it is. I mean, they're replacing guys with guys that are at the same or sometimes better than what the guys were that got hurt.
Alex Verdugo, Will Beatty, they got guys left and right that they've brought up from AAA. They had one series, 1 week, where they had three dudes from AAA have walk-off hits or rookies have walk-off hits. But you have a top rookie as well. You might have rookie of the year.
Is he going to still be here?
Yeah, he's not going anywhere. He's not going anywhere. Absolutely not. Keston here is staying here for the long haul.
That's good.
That's
Travis Shaw won't be coming to getting his job.
No, Travis Shaw might be finding a job elsewhere, if there would be anyone that I would say. 414-799-1250. What chance do you give the Brewers against the Dodgers in a playoff series? Buster Olney thinks they can make a dent in the playoff race if they get in. They're down 2 games of the Chicago Cubs, who are down 3-0 right now in the bottom of the third inning. We'll keep you updated on that from Wrigley Field. Pella Windows and Doors, Wisconsin On Deck Show gets you set for game 2 of the 4-game road trip all out in the desert against the Diamondbacks tonight at 7:30. Bayview Shane Blind post-game show after the game. Talks Brewers right here on 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Boy, and it's a great question, but I think within from 30,000 feet, given what they accomplished last year, given some of the high-end performances they have on their roster, I think you'd feel confident that if they get into the postseason that they would be able to make a dent. I mean, let's face it, at this point it's the Dodgers and there's a separation and then there's a question of who's going to challenge the Dodgers. And I think there's a legitimate chance that if they got into it, in part because the players that they have, that they would present a challenge for the Dodgers.
That's Buster Olney on these airwaves earlier today on the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network. You can hear the whole interview at 1057fmthefan.com. Click on Fan on Demand, brought to you by John Paul's Buick GMC, Highway 100 in Greenfield. Asking you right now, what chance do you give the Brewers against the Dodgers in a playoff series, as everybody is chasing the Dodgers? That's just who you've been chasing for, yes, all of this year, but Sparky, pretty much all of the last 5 years, as they've either been in the World Series or played for the right to go to the World Series in each of those years. And every decision, Mark Zeno from a station down in Atlanta was on the Michaels Network a couple of weeks ago or before the Braves series in Miller Park. And he spoke to making deals at the deadline of, you only make a deal at the deadline that's going to trim the gap between you and the LA Dodgers. Like, if a deal that you're going to make is only going to make you somewhat marginally better and it's not going to change the narrative between the gap of you and the Dodgers, then don't make it. But if you have the ability to narrow that gap, then go ahead and make it and give yourself the best opportunity you have to then face those guys in October and let the chips fall where they may in a 7-game series. Last segment, I heard you for the first time at least open the closet door just a little bit to saying, you add a couple of high-end relievers, we can have this conversation again.
Sure.
That's the closest you've been in the last 3 weeks to saying that they could compete with the Dodgers at all.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. But again, as I've stated before and I'll state again, I'm not about emptying out this farm system right now. I'm just not. And if you want two high-end relievers, you're going to empty out this farm system. I have news for you. If you think you're going to go get Will Smith and Robbie Ray and give up none of your top 10 prospects, you're wrong. You're just wrong. You're dead wrong. If you think you're going to go give up prospects in the 20s and 30s and lower in order to get those two relievers, you're dead wrong. You're going to have to give up way more than that in order to get this done. And you're essentially going in trying to play for it this year. And if I'm the owner of this baseball team, if I'm Mark and Stearns comes to me and says, this is what I want to do, I mean, he's a baseball guy, so you got to let him go do it and stay the hell out of the way if he thinks he can do it. But Now, I think if I'm the owner, I'm going to tell them I got reservations about it, but if you think this is the best, you go right ahead and do this. Because for me, and you pointed it out in the first segment, Billy, it's amazing how the Dodgers just continuously have prospect after prospect after prospect after prospect coming up. The Brewers, again, Brewers are drafting similar to the Dodgers. Dodgers are probably drafting worse than the Brewers have been
worse in the last 5 years, yeah.
And they're producing star players over and over and over again. Oh, we'll trade a couple, and here's a couple more. And you're building that wave of prospects. The Brewers aren't at that point right now. So to sit here and tell me, trade them when you are already not at a strength down there, and go for it when you're not as close as what you were, say, last year at the same point, and more importantly, you can't add help in August anymore. You know, last year, you acquired players at the deadline, acquired players in August. By the time September rolled around, I think you added seven players. Seven!
When you grabbed Granderson and Gio on the last possible day you could, that was the game changer. That was
seven guys,
veterans that we need to make this push.
Think about that. They added like seven different players between July and the time September got there. Seven. This team is farther away than that team was. You aren't adding seven players with this roster with one trade deadline.
No.
I mean, that from that aspect,
absolutely not.
That screws the Brewers because they've made hay in August for several years. When Doug Melvin was here, when they were making their push, Doug Melvin made hay in that month. David Stearns has made hay in this month as well in August. And now you don't have that anymore, which now has to change how you go about it. Because last year at the deadline, it may have been David Stearns saying, all right, look, we're going to do this and this. But I know I can get some cheaper options in August, so we don't have to like do everything now. I can wait and get a couple guys to fill other holes.
Right.
Now you look at it and go, okay, let's look at our holes. How many do we got? We got five or six, David. Can we fill all five or six at the deadline? That's going to be tough, David.
Yeah, we're going to have to sell the Carolina Mudcats.
Right. I mean, so that's, and then you have to make it a determination. Okay, I can fill two of the five or two of the six. Well, what then does it get me if the offense finally gets going? How close do we get if the offense gets going? And that's a big if. It's a huge if. Like, we're going to talk about the Bucks later, and it's the whole internal, improvement of, oh, Middleton's going to get better, and Bledsoe's going to get better, and Giannis is going to get better, and Brooke Lopez is going to shoot better from three, and all that crazy stuff Horace said in that interview with Eric Name. Okay, but now you're looking at it from the Brewers' perspective, and you're asking the exact same thing, except there's no offseason to get better. Now you're asking, you have to get better now. No extra practice.
You got to get better in the next month so we can push at September.
No extra anything.
No.
You all got to go now in the middle of the season and immediately improve. And that's a tough ask. I don't know what team you are, that's a tough ask. Just like if you're the Cubs, that's a tough ask for them.
For sure.
To ask them to flip a switch and just go.
And we talked to Lawrence Holmes yesterday about Chris Bryant. I think that's the biggest internal improvement that the Cubs could have possibly wanted to have, get him back to an MVP form. And you've seen other parts of their team slide down. And the regression of all baseball players left and right during any given season is going to be something that you fight with. But You've seen guys regress in the last couple of months, and then you're expecting to see another put. Like, the Moose and Yasmani Grandal numbers in the last month and a half are staggering. Moose is hitting like .220. Yaz is hitting under .170. Mm-hmm. And you couple that in, though, with Jesus Aguilar in the long, very, very light run that he's gotten, hitting closer to .360 and moving himself back to where he needs to be.
Cassian Hero is unconscious.
He's unconscious. And if you're able to get some of these guys rolling for 2 to 3 weeks, you're going to end up living with the offense that you have. I mean, the amount of runs that they're scoring, they're not going to randomly score two more runs a game for the next 4.5 weeks.
And that's what you're talking about.
But if you're scoring four runs a game, this team is very, very lethal to any team in baseball. Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're going to have to see. Some replies coming in on Twitter to the question about the Brewers and the Dodgers and how this whole thing figures out and what chance do you give the Brewers against the Dodgers in a playoff series? David says, tweeting at 105.7 FM, the Fan, I give them a puncher's chance because in baseball, if you get a decent lead, it's hard for the other team to come back because you have to be so perfect, and you can't score on defense in baseball, and that's the other thing. You get in playoffs, 9 out of 10 times, scores go down. Offense
Absolutely
is much harder to come from. You got guys bunting runners over, doing stuff they don't do during the regular season, early in baseball games, figuring that it's going to be a lot closer. Cubs just hit a grand slam. They're pretty sure that was Anthony Rizzo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was.
And two walks before that grand slam.
4-3 Cubs lead now, just like that.
Was, That was disturbing.
Another one here from Pete. We said the fan, they are clearly a much better team. Therefore, to use an old boxing phrase, nothing more than a puncher's chance in either a 5 or 7 game series. Multiple people with a puncher's chance. Then there's Seth, who says, as is, zero. A couple of key additions, and that changes at that point. Seth tweeting at 105.7 FM, the fan. The other thing to consider in all of this, when we start talking about the Brewers and the Dodgers, are where do you see them? When do you see them? Do you see them after you win a wild card game and they're your divisional round matchup? Or do you see them in the NLCS after you take care of the Braves? Then I think the way that plays out could be a little bit different. Because if you roll in and you barely get in, you win that wild card game, now you don't get to run your best pitcher out there to start that series sure. against the Dodgers. That's a big deal. Then if you win the division and then you win that round, now you got a lot of momentum. Now you can reset the rotation more than likely how you want. And now you bring more momentum into that like you did last year in the NLCS where you disposed of the Rockies 1-2-3. No problem. See ya.
Now we got time.
And now we kick back, relax, and get right for the Dodgers. I think that all kind of plays into how much of a chance you have. And I've heard other people talking about the Dodgers and how they are questioning how good the Dodgers will be in the postseason. Tell me if you get down with this theory. The theory goes that because they're so far out in front of everybody in their division, and this is so locked up, that it will be very hard for them to play for anything meaningful
that they
right away in the playoffs, because they're just going to have it on autopilot for essentially 3 months. And now when they get there and they get in a close game and it's must-win games for that series, it's going to be harder for them to turn it on. I don't know if I buy that.
I don't know if I buy it with that group, primarily because of the failures that they've had in the playoffs, and they know how to succeed in the playoffs. They also know how to lose in the playoffs, as I've brought up to you many a different time on this show. But when you have a team that has that kind of playoff experience, they know what it takes to ramp up. But they aren't going to be playing meaningful games against the Rockies or against the Padres, because those teams are completely gone. They lead the Diamondbacks by, 15 games right now? That's half a month that they would have to lose every single night.
Right.
So
they play no meaningful baseball until they get to October.
For the next 2 months, they're going to be lining up their rotations. They're going to be thinking about the playoffs. But they're also going to be, and this is the part that I think is interesting, they're in the mode that Bucks fans were in this year.
Yep.
Looking behind you.
For sure.
Trying to find the cracks in the holes.
Regular season doesn't mean much now, and you're just waiting for the playoffs to
start.
And
if you think the Bucks fans thought that the regular season didn't mean anything, that's times a million in L.A. Not only because of the media market, but also because of the playoff failures that they've had before. They're going to be hearing all of those conversations as well.
And I'm telling you something else. Next year in Bucks season, it's going to be worse. Because nobody's going to care about the regular season next year.
At least we got the Fear of the Deer District.
No, I know that. I'm just saying, from Bucks fans' standpoint, they're just not going to care about the regular season. They're not going to get all wrapped up in wins and losses and all that other stuff. Because going in, it's going to be, we're the best team in the East. We're going to be the number one seed. And it's going to be, can we beat the team in the West? Or depending on if Philly looks like they might be a problem.
Right.
But other than that, the rest of the regular season games aren't going to mean much. They're just going to be kind of coasting, and if they lose a couple games in a row, I don't think anybody's going to panic or care about it, because they know at the end of the day, they're going to be the team to beat. Jack tweets at the fan, what chance do you give the Brewers in a playoff series against the Dodgers? Jack says, any National League team other than the Braves would get stomped on by the Dodgers right now. I tend to agree.
Didn't the Brewers just beat the Braves?
Yeah. Okay. Don't do that.
Okay.
Don't do that.
Hey, I was just wondering.
Don't do that. Stop.
I was just wondering.
Stop. So if some crappy team beats the Dodgers in a series, oh, they could beat them in the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, the Giants right now, I wouldn't want to play the Giants.
Well, not in San Francisco.
They're rolling right now.
Alex tweets at the fan, I give them a 50% chance. Woodruff
that works.
Starting game 7 sounds a lot better than Chacin.
If they let Brandon Woodruff actually pitch game 7, unlike they did Yolish Chacin.
But do understand something. Woodruff has experience from last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
But being the guy starting
not gonna rattle him.
That situation, that's, you already know where I'm going. That's
not 53.
That's a completely different set of pressures
than
what you pitch on a random Sunday in June or July.
Yeah, not for Brandon Woodruff. Woodruff's got the slow heartbeat that's not going to face him.
Slow heartbeat.
Others, it would.
My heartbeat is very, very fast.
I would be more concerned for a Corbin Burns. Freddy Peralta, I wouldn't even let him near the ball in a game seven. Like, if you're going to give it to him, you're going to put it in his locker. If I'm the equipment guy, I don't have this jurisdiction. I take the ball and I throw it into the stands up into the third level. You're not touching that thing.
I want to be wherever you are if it's a game seven to go to the World Series when Peralta enters the game in the seventh. I want to be wherever you are because I think it's going to be highly entertaining to watch you lose your mind.
It wasn't fun when Josh Hader came in here in the second inning of last year's game seven.
Yes.
It was not fun at all.
I bet you it was not fun at all. Brew Crew Fan OK tweets at 105.7 FM The Fan. With how bad the bullpen is, I would say there is no chance the Brewers beat them. I only trust Hader, and he's had his struggles. Last year, that pen was loaded with Knable, Jeffress, Soria, forgot about Soria, Jennings at times, Sedaniel, Sedaniel is another one, Burns, don't have one of them either right now, including him, Albers in the first half, the current bullpen is garbage. That's Brew Crew Fan, okay, tweeting at the fan, and see, for me, that's really what it is, and I've heard Tim Allen talk about it on the post-game show, and he and I have had our conversations off the air, and we both agree, Hader, get him out of that closing role and get him where you can use him wherever you want in the game, and you're so much
Kirby
better.
Kirby Yates.
Right, and you're so, so much better. That's why, you know, if you get a Will Smith, you get a Robbie Ray, you get both those guys to go in the bullpen, Will Smith saves your closer. And then you have Robbie Ray, Jeremy Jeffress, and Hader on the backside of that with Albers. Now you feel a lot better about getting that game to the fifth or sixth inning and hoping that you can then shut the door behind him. Because
I feel...
right now... when the game's in the sixth inning and they start going to the bullpen, I'm not comfortable.
Especially when Alex Claudio
fifth
grabs
inning,
the ball.
Fifth inning, definitely not comfortable.
That's the nerve-wracking one. I mean, I talk about Corbin Burns and Freddy Peralta being the ones that get my blood pressure rising a little bit. Alex Claudio does to me as well. Quit shaking your head over there in the white shirt, Alan. I want to tell you guys all about Bofording beer. One thing that never has my blood pressure running. Instead, it actually just has me feeling great. It makes me want to go all natural with Bofording beer. That's not a bad thing. Don't worry about it. All natural is a good thing when you're talking about a company imported exclusively from Luxembourg. Bofording, new to the United States, being imported to the state of Wisconsin by a local company using 100% natural ingredients in their brewing process. They use only fine raw materials, the finest raw materials. Talking about fresh spring water, the finest barley, and the choicest hops. The spring water that I talked about from a very special source at Bofording. A source 1,000 feet directly beneath the brewery, and since water is beer's most important ingredient, this exceptionally pure water gives Bofording its fresh taste and smooth drinkability. You'll notice the difference when you drink the crisp Pilsner, the smooth triple ale, which is 8% alcohol by volume, the balanced Brune, 7.2 ABV, and thanks to Bofording's 100% natural ingredients that I was talking about, their commitment to quality, all of their brews give you the full flavor that's refreshing. Rather than filling, right now, Bofording available in more places than ever before in all Fox Brothers Piggly Wiggly locations. Bofording is the featured beer of July with casing and free glassware for purchases. Go to any Fox Brothers Piggly Wiggly locations, pick up a six-pack there, or Total Wine and More, Sendix Fine Foods, or Consumer Beverage, or you can test out a tap at Cafe Hollander, Cafe Benelux, the No Matter Sport Club, and as always, tweet those all-natural pictures to me. Use the hashtag BofordingBill at Bill Schmidt Radio. All-natural pictures of the beer, and I might just come out and have a Bofording on you because Bofording is Milwaukee's all-natural choice for the summer. 414-799-1250, the phone number, live at 1057FMTheFan.com. We have a winner that we will talk about in a few minutes that we've been talking about on the Wendy's Big Show all week long. But if the Bucks are going to be winners in the playoffs, they're going to need some internal improvement, John Horst said. How much faith do you have in that happening? Wendy's Big Show on the Fan. Yeah. Wendy's Big Show on the Fan. Bill Baby Tao, Schmidt, Steve Sparky, Pfeiffer with you till 6 o'clock. How much faith do you have in Chris Middleton and Eric Bledsoe to become better basketball players? Talk about a right-in-your-face question. You need those two to be better basketball players. At least that's what John Horst is telling Eric Name of The Athletic yesterday in the first Q&A that he's had sit-down interview since the Bucks were eliminated from the Eastern Conference Finals. And since the NBA offseason has really unfolded and all the moves have come and gone. The Milwaukee Bucks still have two roster spots that they can use for minimum contracts. That's why they had J.R. Smith in town yesterday being a possible flyer option for a minimum deal and a last guy off the bench. But Malcolm Brogdon gone, George Hill, Brooke Lopez, Robin Lopez all in, and you, Wesley Matthews, in as well, with also guys coming back that you expect to be healthier, more viable options, and a Dante DiVincenzo, maybe a better Sterling Brown, but those two frontline players, Sparky, are who the Bucks are going to need to count on to be better under at least what John Horst is saying in their data-driven analysis. The quote is, I think we made smart, data-driven decisions to our roster to create a team that fits again, that makes sense again for our system and our superstar. So those two around your superstar, how much better can they get around their superstar?
How long do you have to be in the league before you reach your ceiling? How long do you give a player before you say, okay, he is what he is at this point. This is just who he's going to be. There's no need to start talking about, well, if he works really hard this offseason, he can get to this point. Like, how long is that? When the season ended and we kind of looked ahead to this year, I said that I think Chris Middleton will be better. And the reason I think Chris Middleton will be better is because, A, I think his head will be right. I think last year really screwed him up a little bit before the season. You have to sit down. They tell you they don't want you shooting mid-range. They tell you they want you to shoot the three. The strength of your game, they don't really care about anymore. You're going to have to play while they want to play. Mm-hmm. So the offense isn't about you at all. It's about you making sacrifices for Giannis and this team to win basketball games in a contract year, in which he was heading into free agency, trying to get as much money as he can, and then you tell him, yeah, we don't want you to play to your strengths.
Don't shoot that 15-foot baseline jumper.
Right. I mean, seriously,
step that out and make it a 23-footer.
If Chris Middleton would have flipped him off at that point at that breakfast and got up and walked away, I wouldn't have blamed him at all. I really wouldn't have, because you're messing with the dude's money at this point. Like, what are you doing?
After he essentially took a little bit of a discount to stay with you the first time.
Sure. So now he goes into the season, gets benched in a game during the season. And then after that, gets his head right and continues to play. And has his long droughts, like he always has and will always probably have going forward. Didn't have nearly as many hot streaks as he's had maybe in years past, for as long as he's had them in years past. I think now the free agency is done. He is paid. He is here. He knows he's not going anywhere. He knows Giannis should be here based on what happens next summer. So he's good there. He's played with Eric Bledsoe now for a year and a half, so he knows the point guard situation, what he's got there. He's played with Brooke Lopez. So four of the starting five have played together, and then you're going to add in a vet that's probably pretty easy to play with in Wes Matthews. So for me, I think Middleton does get better this year, because I think a couple things happen. I think now this summer his head's clear. He's not feeling any pressure. He can go out there and just work and not worry about anything. So I think that leads to better things. Because sometimes, I mean, you know this, your head can get in the way of you doing something the right way. It can. You can say, oh, I'm good. In the back of your head, something's gnawing at you, and it will affect performance. Whether it be at your job.
Until it gets taken care of, it'll be in the back of your mind.
It can be at your job. Like, those of you that have jobs, it could be at your job. It could affect your performance. It could be in a softball league, a beer softball league, right? Got something gnawing at you. Normally, you're the stud, and all of a sudden, you go in a little bit of a funk because you got something going on at home or something's going on at work or whatever, and you're just not relaxed, and it's affecting how you play. No different, I don't think, with a professional athlete. So I think Milton plays better because his head will be clear. And the other thing is, because now he knows what they want of him in this offense, he can really prepare for that even more so this offseason than last season when it got sprung on him.
That's a great point.
After the point.
A full offseason of work in the system, knowing the expectations of what you're going into this offseason.
I know what the coaches expect
from
me.
And training camp as well.
Right, I know what the coaches expect from me. I can work with the coaches in the offseason. There's no trying to get to know each other factor and what we're all trying to do here. I think Middleton has a better year next year. Bledsoe, they told Bledsoe last year, just shoot threes. That's all we want you to do. Shoot like 100 threes a day. Go shoot threes. I don't know where Eric Bledsoe's head's at. Bledsoe was another guy going to get paid last year, remember? And Bledsoe got his extension during the year. And as soon as he got paid, what happened those next couple of games? Went off, right? Played really, really well.
And didn't he have 30-10 against the Lakers that night?
Yeah. Weight of the world off his shoulders. Good. I'm paid. I'm good. I don't got to worry about this crap anymore. So let's go play. So I think the same thing applies to Eric Bledsoe as well. That weight off the world. So the question is, how much faith do you have in Milton and Bledsoe becoming better players? I have 110% faith that they're both going to be better basketball players this year. How about those apples?
I love that. But now the margins is the real question. Or is the question, how much do they need to? Or do they need to be a certain margin better than they were last year? Because how good they were last year took you 2 wins away from going to the NBA Finals in now a weaker Eastern Conference collectively. I think that you're in a much better situation to get to that point, and the Las Vegas odds would agree with that, as the Bucks are minus 125 to get to the NBA Finals. But for a team that is in the situation that they are in, where all of it is hinging on 34's decision next year to sign the Supermax or not. If Giannis signs the Supermax, you're in, and these dudes are going to roll together. And then I think they grow even more as a group if you're talking about getting better into the offseason, so on and so forth, knowing their roles and knowing how the ball will be shared in different situations. But without a floor general that can take some pressure off of those three, like Malcolm Brogdon, I'm just concerned as to how much better they are when Giannis isn't on the floor.
This is what
I think. Or when they are on the floor separately.
Let's use this just points-wise. Averaged 18.3 points last year. His career high is 20.1 points. I'll say he averages 21 to 22 points a game.
This is Eric Bledsoe?
Middleton,
okay.
21, I'll get to him next. So 21 to 22 points a game. I'll say his field goal percentage goes from 44% to at least 46%, which is what it was in 2017-18, okay? And he only took a half a shot more per game. Mm-hmm. But three-pointers, he took almost a shot and a half more from three-point land. But I think his three-point percentage goes up to 40% from 37%. So I think that goes up to 40%.
That's big time,
if
too.
If those two things happen, I think his average gets up to somewhere around 21, 22 points per game. I think that's a huge deal. Now, let's talk about Eric Bledsoe on the other hand. For me, the thing on Eric Bledsoe that I always will harp on is just effort on both sides of the floor for an entire game. Just please, if you just bring the same amount of effort on defense as you bring on offense, you can be one of the best defensive point guards in the league. And there were some stomping for him last year to be in that conversation for, you know, all defensive first or second team last year in the NBA. Now, this last year, he averaged 15.9 points per game. If you look at career highs for him, his career high is 21.1 for the Suns in 2016-17. He shot 48% from the field last year. That's a career high, baby Tosh. He's never shot that well from the field in his career, 48%. Three-point shooting, he shot 32%. His career high there, where he actually played a lot of games, is 39%, going all the way back to the Clippers in 2012. More recently than
I did not see any of those nights this past year.
Correct. So he shot only 32% this year. He shot, made 1.5 of every 5 threes that
he sounds about right, yeah.
Okay. So, and that's the most he's made in his career in a game on average is 1.6. 1.7 is his high. I think he'll average over 2 threes made a game this year. That will take a step forward too. So I think he goes from 15.9 points per game. I think he gets up to 17.5 points per game. I don't think he can get to 20 just because I don't think there's enough shots in this offense necessarily.
And it's difficult to think that he's going to improve on the defensive side of the ball. He was a first team all defensive player this year.
You'd like to see his assist numbers come up. 5.5 assists. You'd like to get him to 6.5-7 assists per game if possible. That's really where you'd like to see Bledsoe take to get to the next level.
And I think Eric Bledsoe is going to have those opportunities once again without Malcolm Brogdon having the ball in his hand starting the offense as much as he does. 414-799-1250. How much faith do you have in Chris Middleton and Eric Bledsoe becoming better players next year because John Horst says the Milwaukee Bucks are going to be leaning on them to become better and that they're going to need internal improvement to be one of the biggest parts of their improvement? The quote from John Horst, "We didn't just sit on our hands, but a big part of it is, I think we're going to have to be better than we were last year just because of time and experience. The next time we go to the Eastern Conference Finals, I think we will be better than the first time we went to the Eastern Conference Finals. But will two of their three frontline players be?" Wendy's Big Show on the Fan. Bucks general manager David Stearns. That's the Brewers general manager, Billy. Goodness gracious. Brewers general manager David Stearns says his team has 2 weeks to shape up before he has to make a decision at the trade deadline. General manager John Horst of your Milwaukee Bucks said to Eric Name of The Athletic yesterday that he believes they need to improve from within to be the team that they were last year and break where they were last year, which was Game 6 of the Eastern Conference Finals falling to Kawhi Leonard and the Toronto Raptors. But how much faith do you have in Chris Middleton and Eric Bledsoe, the two other frontline players around the superstar Giannis, to become better players in the offseason? 414-799-1250 and on Twitter at 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Lots of tweets coming in. Let's see here. One says, Bucks Film Room tweets at The Fan. At this point in their careers, they probably are who they are. Mitchell tweets at The Fan, regular season, maybe. But Bledsoe now has to show it in the playoffs when it matters. Two straight putrid playoffs for Eric Bledsoe. Let's talk about that for a second.
Shall we?
Let's talk about postseason performance and athletes in general, right? So there are some athletes that are great regular season players, and then when you get into the postseason, maybe they're not as good. For the longest time, Clayton Kershaw was one of those guys that... For the Dodgers,
big
stud
time.
Pitcher,
yep.
Regular season, dominant, got to the postseason and just blew up. And like everybody's like, what happened? Like, why does this continue to happen to this dude? And I'll take it to the bowling side of things, being a big bowling guy, PBA guy, where, you know, you got these guys that are great in qualifying, lights go on for TV, and all of a sudden, it's not there. They miss spares they normally never miss and all of that stuff.
That was never my boy Pete Weber's issue, was it?
Pete Weber had a lot of issues, but no, that wasn't one of them.
Love
so,
that guy.
Yeah. But anyways, when you talk about this situation here with Eric Bledsoe, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it's a mental thing with him. I don't know if it's... It's got to be mental. It can't be anything else.
Well,
what
it
else could
just,
it be? It can't be physical.
Some of it could be physical and teams adjusting to his play style. He's a very downhill basketball player.
For sure.
And if you're able to get in front of him and know that that's coming, similar to Giannis and how Gary was saying it all the time, dude, he's got one thing. He puts his head down, goes to the basket, and at some point, they're going to build a wall, and he's going to have to develop an outside game or some kind of counter. Eric Bledsoe's counter to when teams put up the wall against him, and you do the Pick and Save Milwaukee Pros postgame show, so you
as
can answer
you.
This better than me. There are games where his counter to that is, I'm going to stand out here on the wing, the left side of the three-point line, chill, and then whenever the ball comes, I'm going to dribble it five times, and then I'm going to put it up.
That's right.
That seems like his counter at different points. And when he clamps up like that and closes down, he's not the aggressive player with the aggressive nature that is what makes him so dynamic.
I've told this a million times on the air, but one of the best point guards to come through here has been Sam Cassell.
Mm-hmm.
And Sam
Cassell, alien.
Right. Sam Cassell back in the day when he played with Glenn and Ray always talked about, look, my job is to get the two stars going on this team early and often, right? Get Glenn Robinson a couple easy mid-range jumpers where mm-hmm. he likes it. Get Ray set up to get him a couple easy baskets. Get them involved offensively, because then hopefully I'll have them on the other side of the floor as well. I'll find my offense later in the game, okay? And it worked. Obviously, forever it worked. Well, for that 1 year, I should say. It worked. Eric Bledsoe, to me, seems to be a guy that has to get going early. Otherwise, you could lose him for a half or for a game if he doesn't get going early. So from that perspective, I look at Budenholzer and his coaching staff and go, guys, he's the ball handler. So this isn't like you have a point guard getting somebody else going, right? This isn't Bledsoe getting Giannis or Middleton going within the offense. You have to get your point guard going. This has to fall, I think, on the coaching staff of, listen, Eric, start this game. First 5-6 possessions, I want you taking 3 or 4 of those shots, and 2 of them better be at the damn rim. So you have to throw out that command and that demand on Bledsoe to get him going. And if it's you telling him or it's you pulling Giannis aside and going, make sure he gets going on the offensive side of the floor. However you all figure it out, just get him going.
Yep.
If you get him going and you get him involved in the game, he can be a huge game changer on offense for you, because the better he plays on offense, the defensive intensity picks up on the other end. Now he's deflecting balls. Now we're getting steals.
I think of that game against Houston where he was outstanding offensively in the first 5 minutes, and then for the next 30, he played lockdown defense on Harden. When he was just shadowing him from behind, he had gotten his first couple of buckets, and then he pokes the ball out when Harden just grabs it on the inbound pass, and the whole place goes nuts. And they feed off that energy where it cycles down 1 through 12. You're right.
No doubt. For
him to play with that kind of energy and that kind of intensity, he has to get started on the offensive end, because then it opens up more transition looks for when Chris Middleton can step into a three from 25 feet away. They can get the trail three from Lopez. And obviously Giannis fits into all of that because transition is what he does best.
There are, and I don't know why this is, but I'll bet you if I asked you, I will ask you, when you played high school football at Whitnall, was there that one guy that was kind of like the emotional type leader on the team? That if that guy was going well and everybody kind of fed off of his energy a little bit, and if that guy maybe wasn't going as well, maybe the rest of the team wasn't up as much as they have been in the past.
We had a running back. His name was Daniel, and he was number 12. Tall kid, thick kid, and he played my senior year, a year younger than me. And when he was rolling, you would see him in the backfield, like his head would be like twitching randomly because you knew he was just somewhat, there was something off kilter with him. But when he was running hard, the offense, we were unstoppable. You could throw the ball out to any of our wide receivers. We had two guys that went out and played in college, and this kid was just a downhill runner. But there were two games that we missed him, and I think we played 10-7, 17-6 games.
Right.
There's so always those one dude.
That one dude that kind of is that emotional leader. That when that dude's going, for whatever the reason, nobody can explain it, everybody kind of vibes off of it, and everybody plays a little bit better. Dude, I'm telling you, I think it's Bledsoe, man. I do. I think Eric Bledsoe is that guy for this basketball team, and we can talk all we want about Malcolm Brogdon being that cerebral guy and being that extension of the coaching staff and being a glue guy and all of that, and that all of that very well may be true. But as far as emotional leader and that guy that everybody feeds off when he's going well and that can change games on both sides of the floor, yes, you can point to Giannis. But Eric Bledsoe, I think, is really that kind of difference maker, especially when you get into a postseason matchup where emotion is everything, feeding off a home court crowd or whatever, and then he doesn't play well, and there's your emotional leader that when he's going, you know you can play well. And then he's not going, it kind of brings everybody down.
Well, even that, even to that point, the Philly game when they were in Philly and he gets thrown out, what was that, 4 or 5 minutes into the game?
Yep.
There was some serious emotion those dudes played with the next 40 minutes after he checked Embiid.
He deserved to get kicked out. But
yeah. No doubt. Yeah, he did. But after he checks Embiid, everybody knows, all right, now we need to play for keeps at
this
point.
And that's the thing. He also had to be the tough guy, the bulldog on that basketball team. Kind of didn't have anybody else.
Yeah.
Now you got
fits both of those roles.
Now you got Robin Lopez, so that's different.
I thought you were going to say Pat Connington. I was going to say he is not a bulldog.
No, but Robin Lopez, you know, he can mix it up and get into it, guys, right? So
for sure.
He could be that guy that deals with Embiid so Bledsoe doesn't have to get kicked out of a game anymore.
Oh, that's going to be awesome.
But that is... Bledsoe had the bulldog tough guys in his personality. I mean, he's like he had to go find it or anything, but he was kind of that guy too. Trey tweets at the fan and answering the question, how much faith do you have in Middleton and Bledsoe becoming better players for the Bucks next season? Trey says, I think Chris has potential for another gear in him, but, capital letters, we haven't seen that Bledsoe we know consistently in the playoffs. So for that alone, yes to both.
How much of that, before we get to the sports slash, I know we're bumped up against it, how much of that can be unlocked by coaching, do you believe? In the playoffs, most importantly. Because John Horst talks a lot about it because of Bud's system the second year in. Not necessarily the second full offseason that this group has had together,
right,
but with the coaching staff and the system culture that he's implemented.
I think it plays a lot anytime you're more comfortable in a system. And that's what everybody's worried about in Green Bay with the Packers. You're coming into a brand new system, everybody having to get on the same page and figure it out, where another team that's coming back, say, in St. Louis, everybody knows McVay's system. The quarterback's been there, running back's been there, wide receivers. Everybody knows what they're doing. So you're that much farther ahead when training camp starts because you're not having to try and teach, you know, your entire team what you want to do on offense and defense. And that's the benefit that this team has. You look at the Clippers, you've got to go in and teach Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, what you want them to do and how this whole thing is going to run at this point. The LA Lakers, you're going to have to teach half that roster what you want them to do, including Anthony Davis. So that's going to take a while to take away from what you're trying to do. That is why when you start talking about teams that have made runs, it's because their core stayed together. San Antonio's core stayed together. Ray Allen and KG and those guys stayed together for a while, and Paul Pierce. So Doc wasn't having to reteach every training camp what they're trying to do. So when you keep this core together like the Bucks have, it does give you that advantage. Now, that advantage lasts for the first couple of months, and then everybody catches up, and then once we get to January and February, now everybody's showing you what they truly are. But for the first couple of months, yeah, you can make some hay and make some distance in the conference, in the division, while everybody else is trying to get on the same page.
Wendy's Big Show here on 105.7 FM. The Fan, Cubs are in action right now, keeping tabs on that one as they're up 4-3 in the top half of the fifth inning. Brewers trailing them by two games in the NL Central. Brewers 8:40 first pitch tonight out in the desert at Chase Field as they take on the Diamondbacks once again. Gio Gonzalez will make his return to the rotation tomorrow. We'll have the Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin on deck show tonight with Nick Bodie here at 7:30 on the Fan. Post-game show, as always, after the last pitch, make the switch to the franchise. Tim Allen here coming up. We'll have a conversation geared around Christian Yelich as the figurehead of the conversation, but it morphs with the conversation that everybody's been having around Major League Baseball this year. What is exactly is going on with the baseballs? We also, more importantly, have somebody that is going to be sizzling in the summer heat with some prizes from Wendy's. We have the announcement coming up next on the Wendy's Big Show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.